Another quarter of the songs Cash wrote dealt with love, half of them about the joy of it and half about the loss of it. As a man who thrived in the presence of a strong woman, he preferred dark-haired women who were comfortable working in a man's world and who loved music as much as he did. In June Carter, he met his match. Although she always took great pains to say that she didn't save Johnny Cash, she certainly provided the stability, reassurance, encouragement, and care he so desperately needed. When they decided to marry, she said she was going to put God first in her life, her husband second, and herself last. She knew it sounded old-fashioned, but she believed that inverting this order helped destroy her first two marriages. June clearly delighted in Cash, and he in her. Not only did they live, work, and travel together, but they also read books, prayed, and listened to music together. Considering their history of relationships and the nature of the business, not many people would have believed their marriage could last 35 months, much less 35 years. "She's my companion and my friend," he once said. "We talk about things we don't talk to anybody else about. We understand each other. Sometimes it's scary. We can almost read each other's minds. She's my rock, my anchor. She's always there." Without doubt, June displayed tremendous fortitude over the years, calming Cash during his self-destructive periods, taking him back in when he wandered, staying by his side during his many illnesses. She considered caring for him as her life's great duty, and the music he made over the past three decades could not have been made without her. Indeed, we might well be talking of Johnny Cash, Brian Jones, Janis Joplin, and Jimi Hendrix in the same breath if not for June. "I think they understood each other quintessentially," says Roseanne. "They were both very unusual people. It wasn't easy to understand either one of them. I think there was genuine passion, genuine chemistry. She amused him, and he loved being fussed over and taken care of. She was the talker, and he was silent. She filled in the blanks for him. She made his life easy." The rest of Cash's songs were equally divided between songs about family, justice, music, restlessness, trains, war, country living, the West, and America. He loved his country, its history, its beliefs, its landscape, and its people. And more than any other songwriter of his era, he was identified with the best of American values. He didn't voice disagreements with foreign policy in spite of his love, but because of his love. He only got angry when he thought America was behaving in an un-American way. "One of the last times I talked to him, we spoke about the war in Iraq," says Kris Kristofferson. "I said that we should just go to the table and say that this can't go on because it wasn't going to help us to bomb the country into oblivion. He said, 'I'm with you this time. We're bombing a tribal people.'" A diligent student of U.S. history, he not only read books but projected himself into the lives of cowboys, early immigrants, Native Americans, pioneers, and Confederate soldiers. When he crawled through Nickajack caves, dug up arrowheads on the Trail of Tears, or spent nights alone in the desert of California, he was trying to temporarily put himself in the place of his ancestors, to touch the things they touched, to feel the things they felt. Cash explored his own family history. Earl Poole Ball can remember being with him in New England when they searched a house that he believed rested on the same spot where the first Cash settled in America. In Chesterfield, South Carolina, while en route to a concert in Georgia, he sought out Edgar Rivers, the oldest living member of his mother's side of the family, to learn about his grandfather, John L. Rivers. "I showed him where the old farmhouse used to stand that his granddaddy was raised in," says Rivers. "I took him to the old spring where he would have got water. He said that if he had had a jar, he would have filled it with water and taken it home." In his own life, Cash had had a front row seat to many of the climactic events in recent American history. He had felt the effects of the Depression, and when Mrs. Roosevelt visited Dyess, he shook her hand. He experienced the Cold War firsthand in Germany during the early 1950s, participated in the birth of rock and roll in Memphis in 1954, was driving to a concert in Dallas the day John F. Kennedy was killed, turned down an offer to play at Woodstock in 1969 on the advice of Bob Dylan, and traveled to Vietnam during the war. He attended the Watergate hearings, shook hands with Nixon, Carter, Reagan, Clinton, and Bush, and had a poem written for him by Muhammad Ali. As with many legends in popular music, it's not easy to say exactly what made Cash great. He never became a great guitarist. His voice had a limited range, and his lyrics veered between poetry and doggerel. But the combination of that voice, those words, and that guitar far exceeded the greatness of any one element. He was a presence, a form of energy, a vehicle for truth. "I wouldn't call him a great musician," says Jack Clement. "I'd call him a great musical entity. He was a musical force and a great singer. People believed what he was saying. Most people don't understand that the voice is like an instrument and has to blend in with the other instruments. Somehow Cash understood that, mostly because he didn't care. He would just sing. Somehow, it worked." His inspiration has been less one of musical form and more one of attitude. The people who have admired him, Steve Earle, Dwight Yoakam, the Dixie Chicks, Emmylou Harris, Kid Rock, Joe Strummer, Elvis Costello, Bob Dylan, Kris Kristofferson, Bruce Springsteen, Keith Richards, Bono, Nick Cave, are not united by sound, but by an approach to their art. Cash encouraged people to be honest, to have integrity, to fearlessly explore within, to be compassionate, and to search for truth. "I'm sure I learned social consciousness from John," says Kristofferson. "I learned concern for your brother and independence, doing what you believe in spite of what other people tell you. I admired the way he spoke his own words. There was no question of me ever trying to imitate what he was doing because he was as unique as a snowflake." Cash was an inspiration to Christians because of the candid way in which he discussed the problems that had affected his life. By admitting his mistakes, he gave hope to the spiritually battered and abused. He also suggested a way of living the Christian life that was uncompromising yet compassionate, dedicated to timeless truths yet relevant to contemporary issues, in the world yet not of it, orthodox yet hip. "Can you imagine being a believer in a population where other believers seem like freaks?" says Bono. "I'm talking of my own life as a believer. People were selling God like a commodity, and I couldn't relate to them. Then I met Johnny Cash, and I felt like him. You read the scriptures and you realize that he's actually like these guys in the scriptures. He's not like these weirdos." Ultimately, what made Johnny Cash great was his unique way of viewing the world. "He didn't think like you and I do," is how his sister Joanne puts it. Roseanne elaborates, "You can't apply the template of a normal person to Dad and fit him into it. It doesn't work because he was such an unusual human being, and his mind worked so differently from anybody I've ever met in my life. He not only thought as a great artist, but his thoughts were great art. That was the realm he lived in." The realm Johnny Cash lived in was clouded by pain and colored by grace. He had the ability to transform the rough and commonplace into objects fit for heaven, just as he had been transformed. Rick Rubin remembers him taking Ewan McCall's song, "The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face," and turning it from a love song into a devotional song. "He loved that," said Rubin. "It came really naturally to him. It seemed like his devotion for life came from his devotion for God."